Welcome to Variant Frequencies. Month to month, our podcast brings you fiction stories from a different channel. Sci-fi, fantasy, horror, and some odd bands in between. Visit us at www.variantfrequencies.com.
Hello, I'm Rick Stringer. Our story today is by Dennis Egan. This is the second story that we have done by Dennis. The first one was The Mason's Son. This one is a short tale about the end of the world. And I'm going to keep this intro short as well. Now, on to our story. Fuel Pressure, by Dennis Egan. When the world is about to be destroyed, who finally decides who lives and who dies? Fuel Pressure, by Dennis Egan. They found it on its near-miss pass. Every telescope on the planet had turned toward the giant asteroid as it passed between the Earth and the Moon. Everyone was excited until the calculations were completed, the announcement made. 3 years till its return. 3 years for humanity to get its affairs in order. 3 years of civilization. Or 3 years of madness, or both. The great ship grew in the shadow of the rock, a dinosaur killer. For 3 years, they built the ship in a race with destruction. Now it was launch day, with only 3 days to spare. Brady's job was to fuel the ship. He was the last one on the pad. The ship was all loaded and the pad was evacuated. Soon, Brady would pressurize the tanks with the volatile and dangerous fuel and oxidizer. They would be carefully mixed to lift the ship and its cargo to safety. Just now, though, Brady sat and waited for the fueling signal. And he thought. He thought about how he had left his wife and children at dawn to help with the launch. It was his job. But in 3 days, there would be no jobs. I should be at home, not participating in this farce. His anger and disgust had been festering for months. In the beginning, he believed in the project. Before he had seen the seats on the ship go to old, rich, powerful men and their families. A deal had been made, and they were counting on old Brady to do his part and save their privileged bacon. The bell rang, the green light lit, and Brady walked over to the fuel manifold. He pulled the hoses over to the tank connectors and considered them for a moment.
Looks like old Brady just screwed up.
And he crossed the hoses. He opened the valves as the fuel rushed into the oxidizer tank, and the oxidizer rushed into the fuel tank. He smiled.
You bastards can lead the way for us.
And he left the pad to watch the fireball from home. Carl opened the comm link.
They have sealed the hatches. The future of the human race depends on all of you. Goodbye and good luck.
It occurred to him that it was the first time in 3 years that he hadn't lied to them. In fact, Carl had done a lot of lying. The project hadn't started that way. He wanted to send a rocket and blow that damn rock out of the sky. But it was risky. The rich and powerful didn't want risk. They wanted to be saved. So he promised to save them. Carl took a sip of scotch, lit his cigar, and leaned back in his chair. It had seemed so clear-cut then. The greedy bastards wouldn't give their help, so he would take it. If it meant that he had to sacrifice their lives and his soul, so be it. He had compartmentalized everything. Nobody but him really had the whole picture. And everything was moving so fast that no one noticed there seemed to be a lot of fuel. The structural team just used the calculations given them by three different engine teams, who had thought they were the only ones. The extra fuel on board, the extra mass, plus three times the speed should be enough energy to push the huge rock just far enough.
Here's to the V squared in 1/2 MV squared,
Carl said as he raised his glass to the rocket. Carl watched the fueler's truck drive away from the pad. It covered the several miles to the control center, then right on past out the gate. Carl chuckled.
I understand you wanting to be with your family, but you might be in for a surprise.
Watching the truck disappear down the road toward the technician's village reignited his resolve. He turned to his console and opened the channel.
Fueler clear. Begin ignition countdown.
The ship was ready. In the hours that followed, navigation was calibrated using actual fueled weight. Finally, Carl announced.
Ignition in 10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
And he pushed the button.
Dear God, forgive me.
Gordon looked over at his grandson on the acceleration couch next to him as the rumble of the engines kicked in.
Here we go, Samuel.
The boy's eyes were big. He was excited as only an 8-year-old can be. At 8, you can appreciate all the adventure, but not be bothered by the danger. Gordon, on the other hand, knew the danger, the risk. But he was as rich as Midas. And if he had anything to say about it, something of his would carry on. All around him were his peers and their children and grandchildren. His own daughter and son-in-law had refused to go, even though he begged them to come. They had said, "It should be the best and the brightest, the way it was advertised."
"But you did send Samuel, didn't you?"
he muttered.
"Principles are a fine thing if not carried too far.
I can't wait till we get back and we can tell Mom and Dad all about it,"
Samuel said, almost bubbling over.
"I think Dad is kind of sad to miss the rocket ride. He tried to act like it didn't matter to him, but he looked real sad that he couldn't come. Mom, too. I never saw her cry because she missed one of our trips before. She must have wanted to be an astronaut really bad. Did she want to be an astronaut, Grandpa?"
"Well," Gordon thought, "my money bought what I had needed. Now it's time for a new start, or at least a chance for the boy. My boy."
He held his grandson's hand and waited for the future. Brady stood on his front lawn watching the rocket. He had a beer in one hand and his daughter's hand in the other. His wife and son were inside. He glanced at his watch but didn't tell them it was time. He said,
"Watch for the fireworks, Grace."
He had a self-righteous set to his jaw, and he watched the engines fire. Then there was a brilliant flash.
"Oh,"
said the 4-year-old.
"Pretty."
A minute later, they were washed in thunder, thrown off by the rocket's obliteration. Brady took his daughter inside for dinner, without ever knowing how close to salvation he had been. When the rocket exploded, every pane of glass was blown out of the control building. Miraculously, Carl was unhurt. He stood in his office high in the gutted building and tried to make sense of the scene he couldn't quite see with his flash-blinded eyes. Gradually, he made out the huge crater where the rocket had been, and he knew. He had lied. He had killed. And he had failed. Stunned, he sat down in the jagged window. His feet dangled hundreds of feet from the ground, oblivious of the glass that cut through his pants and into his legs, unconscious of the blood. He lowered his face to his hands and wept like a child as darkness fell. Thank you for listening to Fuel Pressure by Dennis Eakin, narrated by Rick Stringer. To find out more about Variant Frequencies, please go to our website at variantfrequencies.com. If you like Variant Frequencies, tell your friends about us. Thank you. From the Variant Frequencies team, Matt Wallace, Anne Stringer, and Rick Stringer.
Immortality, longevity, an endless lifespan. What would you do to become immortal?
My name is McAllen Orsel. I'm a genetic scientist in New York. I'm caught in a secret war between two powerful groups of immortals. I've been told that I am a messiah to a group of people I barely know. I'm forced on a quest around the globe to fulfill a destiny I never chose. If only I can stay alive.
From Christoph Laputka comes The Leviathan Chronicles, an audio adventure like you've never heard before.
What is Leviathan?
We have been among you for almost a millennia.
What? Immortal?
They can't know about Leviathan.
Blow those charges.
No!
Get down!
Why have you brought me here?
You are here because we need your help.
She was never trained for this.
She was bred for it, Anton.
Well, she doesn't know that.
You'll need to find me, McAllen.
To discover the Leviathan Chronicles and get the next dimension in podcasting, go to www.leviathanchronicles.com.
Their friendships endured for 20 years and more. Wherever life took them, they carried each other in their hearts, in their memories, and in the shadows of their dreams. If you ask, they'll say their story began in those hazy days and cloudy nights in the middle of the 80s. When childhood at last began to blend into tentative, stumbling adulthood. Hazy Days and Cloudy Nights is the new ongoing serial fiction webzine from author Matthew Wayne Selznick. Subscribe and you'll have access to a new chapter every 2 weeks, plus special members-only content, community, and benefits. Sign up for a free trial or subscribe for a year of content for less than the price of a paperback book. Visit hazydaysandcloudynights.com today and let the story take you back.
XDM, Extreme Dungeon Mastery, presents Just One XDM Minute. Episode 32, Roman LARPs. The rise of the Roman Empire meant that the center of role-playing was removed from its philosophical roots in Greece, specifically the Thracian Society of Role-Playing, and re-established as the Warriors of the Codex westward in Rome. Soon, all Rome was participating in live-action role-playing games. Grand and magnificent arenas and colosseums were constructed to contain the spectators of those LARPs. Unfortunately, these early games had conflict resolution issues, particularly the Christians vs. Lions LARP, where early playtests failed to resolve some inherent game balance problems. Now you too can put life back into your dead role-playing games with the new book, XDM Extreme Dungeon Mastery, exclusively available at ExtremeDungeonMastery.com. That's XDM Extreme Dungeon Mastery. Because God doesn't play dice with the universe, we do.